This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. 7 years ago, Dylan Thuris and Joshua Four created an online resource for people who like to seek out the curious and unusual. Today, AtlasObscura.com has more than 5 million unique visitors each month. It contains 10,000 entries, things like the glowworm caves of New Zealand, the self-mummifying monks of Japan, and a fire that's been burning in Turkmenistan for 40 years. Now there's Atlas Obscura, the book. It's billed as an explorer's guide to the world's hidden wonders, and it features 700 of the strangest and most curious places on Earth. Dylan Thuris joins us to discuss the new book and how the Atlas Obscura team finds these wonders of the world. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dylan, good to have you here this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
How did the idea for Atlas Obscura come up in the first place? I mean, how did you and Joshua develop this whole thing?
So both of us independently were always kind of fascinated with these sorts of places. I grew up in the Midwest and would go on these kind of classic Midwestern road trips where it was, you know, 6 hours between each site. And my parents took me to places like Wall Drug, the Corn Palace, or there's a place in Wisconsin that's particularly wonderful called the House on the Rock, which is this never-ending, sprawling museum with the world's largest carousel inside of it, a giant squid fighting a whale the size of the Statue of Liberty. It's wow. Wild. So this sort of imprinted on me. But this came about in around 2008 we really started, because I was heading off to live in Hungary, in Budapest for a year. And Josh and I just started talking about how there wasn't a great resource for people who wanted to find places like this. And these are the kinds of places that we love. We wanted to write about them in a kind of deep, interesting way, not just sort of surface, isn't it weird, but really dive into what makes them so unique. So that's how it began. We really just said, okay, let's build a place where people could submit suggestions. You know, a lot of these places you don't know about unless maybe you grew up a couple miles from it, and you say, you know, there's this guy building a castle in his backyard, and people really don't know, but it's amazing. And that was the idea, and that's sort of what it's grown from.
So you find these places, just people suggest them to you. That's how it comes about.
That's right. So we have an editorial staff that does some of our own research, but we also—
And you vet these when they come in?
Yep, exactly. So we look for them ourselves, and people send us suggestions. Every day we get a new slate of stuff. And almost always there's something that is really surprising. And so then we do some fact-checking. We call around. If we have someone in the area, we kind of send them to check it out. And,
yeah. So how big is the staff gotten?
There's about 20 of us now located in Brooklyn.
Now, out of Atlas Obscura, the website, grows Atlas Obscura, the book, which is 700 really unique and unusual sites. Let's talk about some of those. The one that caught my eye that I really enjoyed was the Garden of Cosmic Speculation.
Yeah.
Because if you're deep and you're philosophical and you'd like to ponder things, this sounds like a great place to go. And it's in Scotland?
Yeah, and it's this kind of metaverse. It's all of these sculptures depicting sort of, you know, black holes and things out of the universe.
Wow.
I mean, it's a really it is a
deep
garden
thoughts.
Of cosmic speculation, and it's only open once a year. But if you can be there on that day, it's like no other place in the world.
Now, the world's largest solar furnace. That was another one that I got a kick out of that caught my eye. Where is this? How big is it? And how hot does this thing get?
I believe that is in France. It is like three stories tall. It's huge. And it's kind of an industrial scale version of like an ant under a magnifying glass. I mean, it basically just catches the sun in this huge reflector.
Wow.
And beams it down. And then they use that heat, that sort of almost laser-like ray, to create steam and things like that. That's how it creates power.
How many suggestions are you getting on a regular basis?
We get quite a few. We actually get more than we can really even turn around. So we get about somewhere between a dozen and 20 a day. And then we will end up publishing about a dozen a day. Places get published.
Wow. Well, what kind of research went into creating the book?
So we created the book as essentially a parallel project to the site. So we researched all of these kind of independently, fact-checked them. And basically it was a lot of, you know, calling. Some of it was going to places. I haven't been to every single place in the book, but Ella and Josh and I have all been to some of the places in the book. And between us and just good old-fashioned journalistic research, That's how we made it.
How many years did it take you to put this together?
We thought it would take like a year, maybe a year and a half. We started in 2011. It came out last September. You can do the math and figure out that we underestimated.
So 5 years to do this. Yeah. It's a very enjoyable book, and have to ask you about some of the local places that are in the book.
Sure.
Because closer to home, there are actually four places in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky that are in this book. One of those is the American Sign Museum that's right here in Cincinnati.
I'm going to be stopping there briefly. It's actually closed today, but I'm able to go in just for a minute. I'm going to be stopping there on my way out of town. I'm really excited.
Yeah, that's a neat place. There's also Chateau La Roche, I think it's called, in Loveland.
Yeah, called the Loveland Castle,
right,
I think.
Right,
yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, that was one of these self-built castles. This guy sort of set out on a mission to make himself a castle and really built it largely on his own. And it has these kind of strange stories. There's some kind of dark history around that castle. But it's there it is. Still today, it is. And I know people really love it. There's like a bike path that goes through it as well or something like that. That I wasn't aware of, or goes near it.
Yeah, I wasn't either. So neat.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's that's almost a genre unto itself.
I know it's one of these places people drive by. They make it a part of the day. You know, you drive by there and you look at it.
It's
really neat.
Yeah.
Really unusual. And then Fort Mitchell, you have the Vent Haven Museum, which is all ventriloquist dummies, isn't it?
That is right. That is right. And I think I'm fascinated. I know it's some people's version of a nightmare, but to me, I'm very interested in. And I think, you know, there's a long history of ventriloquism that they want to celebrate there.
And even the former subway system, in the book you call it Cincinnati's Lost Subway System, that's part of the book as well.
Absolutely, and a part of the city's kind of lore, you know. And I talked to some locals, and I don't think I'm going to be able to make it this time while I'm here. And apparently, they stopped running tours, which is a shame because it's obviously an incredible part of the city's history, and it's like fabric.
And then. In Indiana, not quite the tri-state area, a little farther out, but in Crawfordsville, Indiana, this one I wanted to ask you about. They have the Rotary Jail Museum. What is a Rotary Jail? That's just,
if I'm not mistaken, it's basically a jail that turns.
It's a rotating jail.
Yes, yeah, so you can kind of click, 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 put someone in the cell, close them in, and then you like rotate it to the next cell over. It's like a whole.
That sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, they didn't build a lot of them, so you know.
But there's actually a museum that's dedicated to it in Crawfordsville. Hmm. And another one that I thought looked like a lot of fun. I think this one's in St. Paul. It's the questionable medical device collection.
Sure.
At the Science Museum of Minnesota, which has some really, really weird stuff in it.
It's all the quack devices that doctors kind of, or doctors in quotes, came up with. So it's, you know, electrocute all of your ills away, or, you know, sort of snake oil kinds of stuff, weird head contraptions that were supposed to make, you know, migraines go away, but actually made them much worse. This kind of thing. Yeah.
How big is that collection, I wonder?
I think they've got quite a bit of it, actually. It used to be its own museum, but then it emerged with the Science Museum.
So what is your favorite place that Atlas Obscura has covered?
Oh, man, that's a really hard question. A place that I was lucky to get to go to is a place in Peru about 4 hours outside of Cusco called the Quechua Chaco, or the Last Incan Bridge. And it is a huge suspension bridge, kind of your classic Indiana Jones-style, you know, suspension bridge. And the things that make it fascinating is it's woven entirely from grass. And so the four local villages come together each year, and they essentially harvest a bunch of this kind of hay, straw-like grass, weave that into twine, they weave that into larger ropes, and in this way they create an incredibly strong suspension bridge. The second part of it is that it's basically a functional piece of the Incan road empire. It's in the exact same way it works. It's made in the same way. It functions in the same way as it did 500 years ago or even more. When it was part of this vast, you know, 20,000 kilometer road empire that stretched across South America. So this kind of unbroken piece of cultural history, incredible feat of engineering. And that holds a very special place in my heart.
Did you and Joshua think that this is what you were going to end up doing with your lives, getting into this?
I don't think we gave it that much. You know, we didn't start off with this huge, with a big business plan and all this stuff. We just thought, this is something that should exist in the world. it's strange that it doesn't. Let's make it. And I think what we found really from the first day on is that when people saw this, for certain people, they said, yes, I've always wanted this. I know things. I know what should be in this. And it's, you know, when people see Atlas, they either know immediately this is for me or they sort of are like, I don't understand what this is. But there's a lot of people out there who I think just really felt like this was the travel guide that they'd been wanting.
So you get a good reaction to it. People say, this is really cool.
Yeah. And again, I think for a lot of people, this is maybe the kind of travel they did anyway, and they kind of cobbled it together from this source or this source. But now there's sort of a place where not only can it help them travel, but they can also suggest a place and say, this is a place that really deserves to be celebrated. So that's sort of what we try and do, is celebrate these strange, unusual places.
Do you find that when you go to parties and events and that people are now coming up to you and saying, hey, I got this great idea for you?
Yes. And it's my favorite part of this job. It's my favorite part of doing this is everywhere I go, I ask people, you know, there's got to be stuff. And usually people are like, I don't know. And then you talk for a little bit and 20 minutes in, they go, oh, you know what? The place, I was just right before I came in here, I was talking to some folks and I got two suggestions around here that are not in the Atlas. One is the Potter's Field in the huge cemetery, which is from people who donate their bodies to science. And then at the medical center here, and then they keep the bodies for 2 years, but then people can request to be buried. And so they're buried in this kind of part of the cemetery. And that's a fascinating thing. It's something you never sort of think about when you donate your body to science, what happens after they're done with it. And then there is also, I believe, is the Pyramid Hill Sculpture Park.
Yeah.
Where there's like an underground house that the founder of the park lived in. I only found out about this stuff a minute ago.
There are all kinds of interesting, really don't want to, for lack of a better word, bizarre sculptures.
Sure.
Just all over the place. I mean, it's a fascinating place. So
yeah.
You'd like that one.
So there's one I'd never heard of it. It's not in the Atlas, and it's a perfect, it's so, wherever I go, there's always something.
Yeah. So you think, I guess Atlas Obscura Volume 2 is on the way?
I think so. I mean, yeah, we are currently working towards something. What exact form it's going to take, I think we're still figuring out. We'll keep this book will continually get sort of updated. We're bound by the physical constraints of a book.
Yes.
But I think we'd like to put out another big volume like this, focusing on the whole world with a kind of another kind of framework around it. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I have to ask you, one of the things I mentioned when we were starting out was the fire that's been burning in Turkmenistan for 40 years. That's on the website.
And it's in the book as well.
It's in the book as well. That's a strange one. What's up with that?
It's one of my favorite places that we've ever had added to the site. It's called the Gates of Hell, or sometimes called the Door to Hell. And it was created as an industrial accident, essentially. A Soviet drilling rig went out to the Turkmenistan desert to find natural gas. And they did. This is in 1979. They set up their rig, but they made a mistake. They'd set it up over this giant pocket, this giant cavern.
Oh, no.
And when they started drilling, the whole thing fell in. The rig fell in. It created this enormous hole. And they had a second problem, which is that it was leaking deadly natural gas. So they did what a good 1970s Soviet petroleum geologist would do. They set it on fire. And I think they figured it would burn for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and then it would burn out. That would be it. The problem would be solved. But it is still on fire right now as we sit here talking.
That's crazy. And any idea why it's still burning to this day?
It's connected to an enormous network, essentially, of natural gas.
It must be.
Yeah.
It must be. And then the glowworm caves of New Zealand. That sounds interesting, too.
Yeah, and that's any form of bioluminescence is something that sort of just fills me with a childlike sense of joy.
I think a lot of people find that fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is a cave in New Zealand, and you can go into this cave, and then you, at the end, you sort of get in this little boat, and you row out, and you look up at the cavern ceiling. It kind of looks like a constellation, like a night sky. What you're actually seeing is the larval stage of a type of fungus gnat that, during this period of its life, glows with bioluminescence, and it creates this kind of beautiful, otherworldly, surreal environment.
What do you hope people get from Atlas Obscura, be it the book or the website?
I think the idea, you know, sometimes people say, oh, it's a bucket list for the weird, and you could certainly use it like that, and there's a lot of amazing places in here. But for me, the idea is to, by looking at all these strange, unusual places, to kind of expand your sense of what you think is even possible, to make people realize just how big and weird and wondrous the world really is. And, you know, probably the greatest things in the world aren't in the book or on the site yet.
Dylan, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Dylan Thuris, one of the founders of AtlasObscura.com and the co-author of the new book, Atlas Obscura, An Explorer's Guide to the World's Hidden Wonders.